This is John Bailey of Princeton, New Jersey. On this 8th day of January, 1781, America's war for independence hangs in the balance. In a few moments, here on a wind-swept parade ground, Governor Joseph Reed of Pennsylvania will offer General George Washington's terms to the 11 mutinous regiments of the Pennsylvania line. These regiments, the bulk of General Washington's Continental Army, mutinied last week over allegedly intolerable conditions. If today they accept Governor Reed's proposals from General Washington, they will go back into the line. If they refuse, it is feared that they will desert to the British, and the armed might of the United States of America will collapse, ending in disaster this country's five-year-old struggle for independence from England. Everywhere in the nation on this cold January morning, from Boston to Savannah, the fears and the hopes of Americans are centered on this windy field.
January 8th, 1781, Princeton, New Jersey. You are there.
Mutiny in General George Washington's Continental Army. Insurrection so critical that it endangers the war for independence. CBS takes you back 168 years to an obscure but decisive crisis in the birth of the American Republic. All things are as they were then, except for one thing. When CBS is there,
you are there.
You Are There, produced and directed by Robert Louis Cheyenne, is based on authentic historical fact and quotation. And now,
Princeton, New Jersey, a windswept parade ground, and John Bailey.
From Washington to the mutinied regiments of the Pennsylvania line, the fate of American independence will be decided. Last Monday, New Year's Day, at Mount Kemble, their winter headquarters, these 11 regiments, comprising some 2,000 soldiers, killed and wounded several of their officers and then marched out of camp. They took the road to Philadelphia, causing panic in that city and among the members of the Continental Congress there. The men were in a wild, explosive mood. No one knew what their plans were. Some said they meant to loot Philadelphia. Others thought that they were on their way to desert to the British. But arriving here at Princeton on Wednesday, they seized the buildings of the College of New Jersey, set up a fortified camp, and elected a board of sergeants. This board permitted no one, not even officers, to enter. But finally, last Saturday, following extensive communication with General Washington at Continental Army headquarters at West Point, Governor Reed of Pennsylvania advised the board that he wished to offer terms, and the sergeants invited him to Princeton. Governor Reed will announce General Washington's offer to an assembly of the regiments drawn up on the field here. The troops are, as a matter of fact, falling in by regiments now. The governor is at Colonel George Morgan's mansion at the south end of the parade ground. With him is General Anthony Wayne, executive officer of the Philadelphia line. They're waiting there for the troops to complete their assembly. The big question is, what are General Washington's terms, and will the troops accept those terms? For an analysis of that question, we take you now to our headquarters booth here at the College of New Jersey and Major George Fielding Elliott.
First of all, let's look at what the Pennsylvania troops want. The men mutinied because they didn't have enough to eat. They were poorly clothed and supplied. They weren't paid regularly. They received their last pay 6 months ago. But most important of all, these veterans of the line want to be discharged from the service and go home. The men claim that their officers tricked them. Most of them can't read or write. They signed their names with a mark, and they say they thought they were signing up for 3 years. On the other hand, the officers of the Pennsylvania line insist that the men knew that they were signing up for the duration of the war. Of course, the officers have the problem of keeping an army together to fight the war. Now, how can General Washington cut this Gordian knot? He can't discharge all the men. To do so would be to demobilize the bulk of his army. It would open the way for the British to Philadelphia. Other state lines have similar grievances, and such a settlement would be literally inviting them to mutiny. It would mean the disintegration of the whole of Washington's army. General Washington, of necessity, must offer the men much less than they demand. In their present mood, however, it seems doubtful that they will accept less. If they don't accept General Washington's offer, the men may desert to the British in New York. Of course, that too would mean disaster for the war for independence. And so, that's the situation. A very grave and critical situation. Well, here at Princeton, the troops have still not completed their assembly. And at West Point, New York, Arthur Haynes, is ready to interview General George Washington himself on this matter. So, over to West Point.
General Washington is with us now at our microphone. General Washington, can you tell us the terms Governor Reed will offer for you to the Pennsylvania mutineers?
I regret that I cannot. Governor Reed has agreed with the Board of Sergeants representing the troops at Princeton that the terms will be made public only on the parade ground, to all the men at the same time.
I see. Well, does the fact, General, that the Board of Sergeants has agreed to this mean that the Board itself has accepted the terms?
No, as I understand it, the Board of Sergeants is not empowered to accept any terms. Only the troops can do that.
Well, then, do you think, General Washington, that the troops will accept the terms?
Well, I think the complaints of the men are fully justified. I've begged and pleaded with the Congress and the respective state governments to take action to right their wrongs. Unfortunately, our legislators have failed to act, and so the troops have acted instead. Acted rashly, yes, but now I believe they've had time to consider the grave possibilities inherent in their impulsive action. I'm certain they must realize that if our struggle for independence is to to continue, it's impossible to grant what they ask. They must compromise. You know, I cannot find it in my heart to believe that the men who stood fast with us 3 years ago at Valley Forge will become traitors today at Princeton.
General Washington, what about the reports that the mutineers are being led by British agents?
No, I refuse to believe that.
You don't think, then, that the agents of the enemy are among the troops at Princeton?
Oh, certainly they are. The enemy has definitely infiltrated our ranks everywhere. Their agents take advantage of difficult conditions in the army to stir up discontent. But discontent, sir, is not treason. No, I would stake my life and all that I hold dear that the men of Pennsylvania are not treasonous. They must remain loyal today. They must listen to the voice of reason and patriotism. They must accept our terms.
Thank you, General George Washington.
General, this matter
this is Arthur Hannes at Continental Army Headquarters, West Point, New York. We return you now to our CBS headquarters booth at Princeton and Major George Fielding Elliott.
Our Philadelphia newsroom informs us that a short while ago, CBS correspondent Don Hollenbeck returned from enemy-held New York City. He passed through the lines under safe conduct to interview Sir Henry Clinton, commander-in-chief of British forces, for his views on the mutiny of the Pennsylvania line. Hollenbeck made a tape recording of the interview, and our Philadelphia newsroom will play it for you now. Bear in mind, of course, that Sir Henry Clinton speaks as the enemy military commander. Much of what he says may be discounted as propaganda. CBS, however, has verified the factual information in the interview, and it may have important bearing on the situation at Princeton. The next voice you hear will be that of Don Hollenbeck speaking by tape recording.
We're in the library of the mansion near Bowling Green, which Sir Henry Clinton has taken over as his personal residence. A reception is in progress here. The guests are dancing in the drawing room to a minuet by Haydn. But Sir Henry has taken leave of them to grant us this interview. Sir Henry, sir, may we have your opinion on this mutiny of the Pennsylvania line?
Oh, pleasure, sir. Very great pleasure. The spectacle in the New Jersey colony, the happy omen, what shall shortly come to pass in all of His Majesty's colonies in America.
I see. You expect the other state lines to follow the Pennsylvanians into mutiny.
Oh, indeed, sir, I do. Why do you suppose Washington and the Continental Congress are offering terms to the mutineers? Rather degrading, what? The commander of an army and the government of an alleged nation on their knees before common soldiers, pleading, entreating them to obey orders. And why, sir, do you suppose force has not been employed to quell the mutiny? I shall tell you why. Because even Washington's own men at West Point are on the verge of mutiny. My intelligence informs me that everywhere the Continental troops are coming to their senses, and the civilians as well.
Well, you think, then, sir, that the rest of the states may end their war for independence?
The respective colonies, sir, have had enough. His Majesty's subjects now realize full well the folly, the madness of the criminal sin they have committed in rebellion against the crown. They are turning, as they should, in righteous wrath against their misleaders. And as His Majesty's Commissioner for the Peace, I'm prepared to forgive, forget, to welcome all the prodigals back to His Majesty's sovereign embrace.
Yes, I understand, sir.
Well, that's very good of you.
Sir Henry, is it true that your agents are busy among the Pennsylvania mutineers, encouraging them to return to His Majesty's sovereign embrace?
It is true that I have dispatched a personal representative to the Pennsylvania line. He is Mr. John Mason, a civilian of New York City. And he will make known to the troops the conditions under which I shall be disposed to receive them.
And what are those conditions, Sir Henry?
I very much fear me that you shall have to wait upon Mr. Mason for that intelligence, sir.
Well, Sir Henry, do you think that the men will accept those conditions?
Certainly, certainly. Mark my words, sir. It is only a matter of days before Mr. George Washington and his despicable crew of traitors will be hanging from the trees in so-called Independence Square in Philadelphia. And now, sir, my compliments, my guests await me.
Thank you so much, Sir Henry Clinton.
This is George Fielding Elliott in Princeton again. The interview you just heard was a tape recording made by Don Hollenbeck at British headquarters in New York City. And now the troops of the Pennsylvania line have completed their assembly on the parade ground outside. Governor Reed is ready to address them. So, over to John Daly.
The men of the Pennsylvania regiments are drawn up before a platform here at the west end of the field. Governor Reed, General Wayne, and their party are at the foot of the platform now. They came out of Colonel Morgan's mansion a few minutes ago. The governor is talking to Sergeant Bowser, the secretary of the Board of Sergeants. He's a small man, thin, almost emaciated, and I should judge about 60 years old. Before the war, he was a printer in Philadelphia. The men of the 11th Pennsylvania Regiment standing rigidly at attention in this raw, biting wind must feel it penetrate their ragged and tattered uniforms, so shabby and meager that they're hardly to be called uniforms. Their faces are thin with hunger and blue with cold, and they're silent, utterly without expression. You can't help wondering what they think as they see Governor Reed and the other members of the delegation from the Continental Congress, fresh from comfortable Philadelphia, seemingly untouched by the rigors of war. And now Sergeant Bowser and Governor Reed are mounting the platform. There's the drum roll. In just a moment, the sergeant will speak.
Men, it is a foul day for ill-clad and poor-shod lads to be standing outdoors. So I'll not belabor you with talk. You know what Governor Reed is here for, so let's give ear to what His Excellency has to say.
Soldiers of Pennsylvania, General Washington believes that you have acted not as traitors, but out of a sense of outrage and indignation caused by conditions which you deem intolerable. Let me therefore list the proposals of your commander-in-chief to alleviate those conditions. Firstly, a pair of shoes, overalls, and a shirt will be delivered out to each soldier in a few days. Secondly, the arrears of pay will be made up as soon as circumstances will permit. Thirdly, no soldier or non-commissioned officer shall be retained in the service beyond the period of his enlistment. Fourthly, in cases where enlistment records are in dispute, the government will set up a board to settle whether such soldiers have enlisted for the duration of the war or for 3 years only. Fifthly, a general amnesty will be granted. There will be no retaliation or punishment. This incident will be allowed to pass into oblivion. Then those are the terms. Discuss them, vote on them. If you are loyal Americans, if you are patriots, you will accept them. I shall await your decision in the Morgan mansion.
Finishing his address, Governor Reed steps back and motions to Sergeant Bowser.
All right,
and the sergeant
friend.
Again.
You have heard the governor. You will now fall out and proceed at once to your quarters. There you will find copies of General Washington's proposal, which His Excellency has made available to us.
The men are breaking ranks, falling out, and returning to their quarters. Governor Reed and Sergeant Bowser are coming down the platform, and the sergeant evidently will escort the governor, General Wayne, and the others back to the Morgan Mansion. But here's Sergeant John Williams, the president of the Board of Sergeants. Let's see if we can get a reaction on General Washington's terms from him. Sergeant Williams.
Yes.
Sergeant, what do you think of General Washington's proposals to end your mutiny? Are you in favor of accepting?
Nay, sir, I am not.
Why not, Sergeant?
'Tis a waste of time to consider General Washington's terms. We ought to be going to the British.
Why? Don't you believe General Washington means what he says?
Promises. Since 79, we've had naught but promises. Can a man wear words on his back? Can he buy rum at the taverns with promises? And what's to be done about discharging the men who served their 3 years in the army? General Washington makes a pretty offer, indeed. A government war to decide who's to go home and who isn't. Mister, we all want to go home.
Then you won't accept a compromise.
We can't accept a compromise. If we put down our guns, our officers will hang all our leaders and punish the men. They'll be hanging and flogging to make examples of us for the rest of the army.
But Sergeant, General Washington promised a general amnesty, no retaliation.
Blast General Washington. We can't trust any man's word. We've got to go to the British.
What about the revolution, Sergeant Williams? Have you thought about the effect the desertion of the Pennsylvania line will have on the rest of the country?
The revolution is lost. It was lost long before we mutinied at Mount Kemmel. Lost by the fat-bellied civilians drinking and swilling to their heart's content while we soldiers were starving in the field. So I say finish. Make peace with the British.
Thank you, Sergeant Williams. Now, another opinion on General Washington's terms. This one from the Secretary of the Board of Sergeants, who is at the Morgan Mansion. Go ahead, Jack Walter.
Sergeant Bowser, I just heard the president of your Board of Sergeants tell John Daly that he's not in favor of accepting General Washington's terms. Do you agree with Sergeant Williams?
That's what I'm trying to figure out, lad. And it's a mighty difficult thing to do.
Well, Sergeant Williams predicts that the men will reject Governor Reed's proposals and will go over to the British.
They might do that, and I'm not the man to judge them or blame them. We've had much grief and misery.
Then do you also think, as Sergeant Williams does, that General Washington is only offering the terms to get the troops to lay down their weapons and not because he means to meet your demands?
Lad, I believe General Washington is a good man. But even good men will go back on their word if they consider it to be a harsh necessity. The general might betray us in the interest of maintaining discipline.
You believe it's right then, Sergeant Bowser, to jeopardize independence for the safety of 2,000 men?
That's a question, lad. Many of the men are saying the war is lost, and they may be right. And if the war is lost, lad, we shall have to answer to the British for taking up arms against them. Perhaps it is a wiser thing to make peace. British now and save our necks.
I see. Then you'll vote to reject the governor's offer.
Nay, lad, nay, I didn't say that. I only said 'tis a question, a difficult question. And no man is going to rush me into making up my mind.
Well, you haven't got much time, Sergeant. Don't you think... Excuse me, Sergeant Bowser. Ned Calmer at Nassau Hall, one of the college buildings, reports that Mr. John Mason, the enemy agent mentioned by Sir Henry Clinton, has arrived at the headquarters of the Board of Sergeants. So now, over to Ned Calmer.
Mr. John Mason arrived here a few minutes ago. He has brought Sir Henry's offer to the troops, and the board has received the offer and is already passing news of it to all the men in their quarters. Sergeant Williams has given us permission to interview Mr. Mason, and he's here with us now at the microphone. Mr. Mason, would you tell us the terms of the offer that you've brought to the troops from Sir Henry Clinton?
I should be delighted. If the Pennsylvania troops will now lay down their arms and return to their true allegiance, they will be paid in hard cash, the money due them from the rebel government, and all possible comforts will be supplied to them.
And if the men accept this offer, Mr. Mason, will they be expected to serve in the British rank?
Well, not at all. No further military service will be asked of the troops, except it may be voluntary. The Pennsylvania regiment...
Excuse me, Mr. Mason. Governor Reed has just entered the room. He's talking to Sergeant Williams. Let's hear what he says.
Your information is correct, Governor. Meet Mr. John Mason, representing His Majesty's government. Mr. Mason, Governor Joseph Reed of the state of Pennsylvania.
You do, sir.
Sergeant Williams, I demand that this man be shot at once.
You're not in the Pennsylvania Council now, Governor.
You gave me your word that you're treating in good faith. Now you must prove it. If you put this spy to death...
You're mistaken.
Yes, you are a spy. And if you put him to death, Sergeant Williams... It will mitigate the offense of leading the regiments into mutiny.
I couldn't put this gentleman to death if I wanted to. The men know he's here. If they vote down General Washington's offer, they'll need him when they go to the British.
I demand that you...
If I may be permitted...
Be silent, Mr. Mason.
You, sir, are a rebel. You represent an illegal body. You have no lawful authority whatever to command these men in any fashion.
How dare you?
I dare, sir, to inform Sergeant Williams that if I should be injured in the slightest, Sir Henry Clinton's offer to the Pennsylvania Regiment will be automatically null and void.
Sergeant Williams, this is an order. Shoot this man at once.
I'm issuing the orders here, Governor. And my orders are that Mr. Mason is guaranteed his safety until after the men vote. That's all.
This will not be forgotten.
Governor Reed is leaving the room. His face is white with anger. And now Ken Roberts is out there on the field with one of the groups of Pennsylvania men who are going to have to decide soon whether to accept or reject that British offer. Let's find out what's going on there now. Go ahead, Ken Roberts.
Here with me at the microphone is Ensign General Tom Peterson of the 3rd Regiment. He has some pretty strong opinions on the British proposal.
Aye, sure I've got strong opinions. I say, take the British offer. I've been in the line for 5 years, ever since 76. I enlisted for 3 years. I've had enough of war, enough of fighting. I want to get out while I'm still alive.
I stand right up, Peter. Now, here's another man also with the 3rd Infantry. His name is... What's your name again, soldier?
Jim Halloran.
Well, what do you say, Jim? Do you agree with Tom Peters about deserting to the British?
Fight. That's what I want to do. Fight the British, not join them. I didn't mutiny to desert to the enemy. I'm not a traitor. I left the line to go to war and being treated right. But now General Washington's given us fair terms for a settlement, and I say, let's take those terms. Let's settle this thing. Let's get back at the enemy.
Fight. That's all you youngsters want to do. Fight. How long have you been in, Halloran?
10 months. What of it?
You see what I mean? 10 months. Wait till he sees his friends killed, dead on the field, like I did at Monmouth, Stony Point, Brandywine. Wait till he starves, like I did at Valley Forge. Wait till he hasn't seen his wife and children for 5 years.
And how will that family of yours take to you with a mark of traitor on you? Do you think your friends will welcome you back?
I don't care about my friends.
Your wife, then. Do you think she'll open her arms to you? A deserter?
My wife will have me back and glad to have me. Aye, no matter what I am. And that goes for all the veterans in this camp.
You're a big dumb ox. You're a turncoat, a traitor. What? That's what you're good for. To polish the boots of the British.
Watch your tongue, you young fool.
There's the assembly call. The men are being summoned to fall in by regiment. It must be voting time, so back to John Daly at the platform.
It is voting time, the crucial vote on General Washington's proposals to end this mutiny and carry on the nation's fight for independence is about to be taken. Sergeant Bowser tells us that the men will vote by a show of hands, a simple majority to decide. The sergeant also tells us that at present there are exactly 1,991 men in the line. If 1,000 men vote in favor, General Washington's proposals will be accepted. Tellers have been appointed for each regiment, and the men are falling in quickly. The assembly is almost complete now. There's a little talk, but the discussion is over, really. Now it's up to each individual soldier. There's the drum roll. Sergeant Bowser is on the platform. In a moment, we'll hear him speak. Let's listen.
Men, there are two ways you can go. If you take the road to the British, it'll bring you out safe and sound. But the price is shame and treason. If you take the road that leads back into the line, there's also a price to be paid. You'll be putting your lives in the hands of General Washington. And if he gives you your lives, you may lose them again on the battlefield. Because there's still a war to be fought, and only the good Lord knows whether it's to be won or lost. Now, men, we'll vote on Governor Reed's proposals. All those in favor of accepting them and going back into the line, raise your right hand and raise them high so the tellers can see them.
And hands are going up all over the field. It's impossible to tell how many of the men are voting in favor of General Washington's proposals, but roughly, I'd say a little more than half, but we can't be sure. It's going to be a tight vote in any case. The tellers are moving up and down the ranks, making their count as they move among the men. There are several tellers for each one of the regiments, and they are working swiftly. Now they're signaling up to the platform that the eye count is in, Sergeant Bowser.
Now, let's see the hands of the men who are against accepting General Washington's proposals. Up with them now, up high.
Well, there seem to be somewhat fewer hands, but still I can't be sure. Standing up here on the platform looking out over these men as they're standing in rows on the fields, it's impossible to count them, but there do seem to be fewer hands. And once again, the tellers are moving up and down through the ranks, making their count. Governor Reed on the south end of the field has come out to watch. General Wayne is with him. Also, the members of the Continental Congress delegation who have come up, as we told you, from Philadelphia. John Mason, the British agent, is at the west end of the field under guard, and he's watching the vote with Sergeant Williams. If the men are loyal, he most likely will be summarily shot as a spy. Now the tellers are beginning to move toward the platform to report to Sergeant Bowser, and of course they will give him the individual regimental counts, and he'll have to total them before we have a final figure. As I said before, the Pennsylvania line numbers 1,991 men. A vote of 1,000 will be decisive one way or the other. Sergeant Bowser's up there busy now with the tellers who've come up from the ranks. He's checking his figures with two members of the board, and in a moment, we'll know the result. We'll know whether the men of the Pennsylvania line... Here's the result.
You've made your decision. The count is 781 against and 1,210 for. We are going back into the line, lads. And may God help us.
The mutiny of the Pennsylvania line is over, and the men are returning to their duty. General Washington's faith in the patriotism of the men who fought and suffered with him for independence for five long years has been justified. And you can only imagine the intense relief and gratification that he will feel at this inspiring news. It'll undoubtedly give a new stimulus and...
January 8th, 1781. The men of Pennsylvania turned their backs on treason, and the war for independence goes on to victory.
You have been listening to Mutiny in the Continental Army, another broadcast produced and directed by Robert Louis Cheyenne. Mutiny in the Continental Army was written by Michael Sklar and Mr. Cheyenne. Thorin Thatcher played General Washington. Anthony Kemble Cooper was Sir Henry Clinton. Eric Dressler played Governor Reed, and the cast included William Podmore, Stats Cotsworth, Bernard Lenroe, Joseph Boland, Bob Reddick, Guy Sorrell, and others. Next week...
May 6th, 1802, Haiti. The betrayal of Toussaint Louverture. You are there.
This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.